What's up, political NBs and political enemies? NBs and enemies, that's what we got here. Just kidding. I don't have any enemies. Welcome to Politically Non-Binary. I'm your host, Ariel Isaac Norman. And you know what? I always tried to model this podcast off of all kinds of podcasts I like, but I listen to so many different podcasts and they have so much going on that it's like, why am I trying to a little bit copy a lot of podcasts? I mean, that's going to happen naturally anyway, but I also just kind of want to do my own thing, which I'm modeling off of a podcast called... what the hell is it called? I really love it. Jessica Something's podcast. Oh, I should look this up and then come back. And God, I really enjoyed that beginning part, so I don't want to lose it. I will get back to you later on a podcast because I do want to recommend podcasts that I listen to and that I love. Anyway, it's like she's just very herself, and she is a comedian too, and she just has her own little thing. She just comes on, she's honest and forthright, and she puts out her podcast whenever she wants to. And that's the thing you might have noticed, those of you who are subscribers, you know, you might have noticed that these podcasts come out whenever, just like my Gender Fluids podcast comes out whenever. We are going to try to be more consistent with Gender Fluids, and I'm always trying to be consistent, but I have a lot going on in my life, and so here it is. I'm going to put out this podcast whenever I want to and about whatever I want to, and there it is. If you like me and you want to hear from me, this is just my way of having a way to talk to y'all, and I might start talking about more stuff in these podcasts and not just having interviews. I might give some hot takes on things. Is there anything to give a hot take about right now, though? I'm recording this on Thursday, June 23rd, this intro. I recorded this podcast a week or two ago that's coming out. Oh, so this episode is going to be with my friend Shannon Amiot, who lives in Hawaii. She'll introduce herself here in a second. But the episode you've got coming up, we are talking a lot about sustainability. I know it's like a fucking boring topic. How to save the earth, how to save our ability to thrive on the earth, how to not waste stuff, but the whole episode, what we really came to was that we need to make reusing things sexy and not stigmatized. Destigmatize being good about environmental stuff, and it's already kind of in the works, but there's a lot of bullshit still, and a lot of us just not thinking about things or trying to put all of the burden on corporations, meanwhile still supporting the corporations that we know are shitty. So we're just passing the buck. Everyone's always passing the buck. Passing it to companies, passing it to politicians, passing it to the rich, passing it whatever. But this episode is all about, like, what can we actually do? Take it from someone who has beat herself up trying to figure out how to be sustainable, how to help with sustainability kind of stuff. But it's also, it's a fun episode. We keep it light, we keep it fun. And it's just like a lot of really practical stuff in there of what you can do and the limits of what you can do. And yeah, there's some a little bit of talk of poly stuff in there too. Anyway, yeah, how actual recycling, actual upcycling, conspicuous upcycling, how to make that sexy. What kind of waste can we avoid? How could we be more into locavorism in a way that makes sense? Stuff like that. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. I might come on at the end if I think of something that's going on in today's... there's probably stuff going on in the news that I just have no idea about. I'm on the road right now recording this from San Francisco. I'm staying at a friend's in San Francisco for a few days while I do shows here. And then I'm off to Eureka, California. This won't come out before that. And then I'll be in Portland and Seattle. I don't really know when this is going to come out, so just go to arielisaacnorman.com. arielnorman.com works too. A-R-I-E-L-L-E for tour date information. My website should be pretty much up to date. You can also find me on Instagram at ellengenderless if you want to know about shows. I try to keep shows in a little upcoming show tab, but just poke around or send me a DM, honestly. Yeah, you can send me a DM and I will probably get back to it in time. Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, I don't know what's going on in the world. It's the summer solstice just happened. That's the big news. We just had the longest day of the summer and my period's late, so that's good. I think that's a summer thing. And I'm glad my period's late because my Diva cup is in my car right now. So thank God. Praise God. Okay. There's a bunch of stuff in the show notes today. I feel like I'm in like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure when I say that kind of stuff because I haven't actually made the show notes. But if you're listening to this, then there's stuff in the show notes of all the stuff that we talked about, because in the future, I'm going to go into the past and make there be show notes. Are y'all old enough to have seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? Drop me a line. I'm creating engagement. Well, you're supposed to. And honestly, I like engagement. It's like, I was just talking about this with some friends last night, how like people, we all kind of know social media is awful and is addictive. But if you change your relationship to it, if you get into a decent place with it, where you're not spending too much time, where you're not making yourself feel bad, like most of what I do on social media is just talk to people. I post little things sometimes. I glance at people's stories and posts sometimes. But mostly I'm just in my messenger. Mostly it's just a DM thing. And I like talking to people. Sometimes I'm talking to strangers and like they're kind of fans and I have no idea, but they're flirting with me or they're talking to me about ideas or whatever. Like I just really enjoy that. And there's going to come a time when I don't have time to respond to everyone. Not that I respond to everyone, but I respond to most people at this point. But there's going to be a time when I won't be able to do that. So let's enjoy the heyday before I'm just too famous, because I am going to be too famous at some point, you guys, with your help, if you guys would help me in any way. So if you enjoy this podcast, or if you just enjoy me, honestly, you know, if you don't enjoy this podcast and you're listening to it, that's weird. But thanks for giving it a chance. But if you enjoy my comedy, if you have seen my comedy shows and you like that, if you like what I'm doing on the internet, whatever, then support me and or this podcast in any way. You can tell a friend about the podcast or me or my Instagram. You can, you know, follow me on social media, subscribe to this podcast, give it 5 stars, give it a review on Apple, on Spotify, well, review on Apple, rate on both. You can Venmo me money if you want to. I just got, I keep getting parking tickets in San Francisco. I didn't have my wheels turned. I didn't know about that rule. Fuck San Francisco, by the way. I mean, I love doing comedy here and I love my friends here, but this San Francisco strikes me as, it's like New York if New York were dirtier and more expensive and people were judgmental. So I don't know if y'all are kidding yourselves, those of you who live in San Francisco and love it. No, I mean, it's great. There's some great food. It's beautiful. I really enjoy the hillness, although you could just be in Seattle. No, it's a big metropolitan, cosmopolitan. That's the word I'm looking for. City. I mean, you know, I've had some great times here. Like I said, great people, great times. But Jesus Christ, the city has some issues. How did I get onto ranting about San Francisco? Oh, because I need, you know, I'm now officially losing. And I had to spend $1,000 getting my car fixed. Okay. So if anyone would like to support me financially, that is very welcome. You can subscribe to the page. You can do Patreon, but I would rather you do Substack at this point. I also am going to start a Fansly soon, but I haven't done that yet. But if you go to patreon.com/politicallynb or politicallynb.substack.com, you can subscribe. I am going to be posting a bonus clip from this episode onto the podcast. And then, I'm gonna post a bonus clip from the podcast. And I just post stuff randomly. Sometimes I post stand-up clips. Sometimes I'm gonna post whatever I fucking want to. And that's what it's gonna be. And that's just how I can do it. You can subscribe, yeah. So patreon.com/politicallynb, politicallynb.substack.com, onlyfans.com/oversharial if you really want that. And eventually there'll be a Fansly. Fansly's cool because you can have like multiple tiers of stuff where some people could pay $5 a month and then other people could pay $30 a month and get, you know, maybe the $5 a month people just get fun content and then the more expensive people get the sexy content. Who knows? I'm going to get into that. Tell me what you guys want too. Those of you who are engaged like this, like listening to this, like what would you want from me? I do have stickers available on my website. Again, Ariel Norman or arielisaacnorman.com, ARIELLE. And Isaac is spelled ISAAC, by the way. A lot of y'all think it's ISSAC, which would be pronounced Isaac, which is cute. I also get Ariel with two R's sometimes, which I really like. I might just change the spelling of my name to some of the ways y'all misspell it. But anyway, there are stickers available there. My if you're hot enough, I'll change my pronouns for you stickers are there. And soon there will be sweatshirts. Soon there'll be sweatshirts. But I'm working with artists on the cute little androgynous me logo that we need for that. You know, I was going to feel bad about how long this intro is, but I don't, because just pretend it's like ads. Like other people put 10 minutes of ads in the beginning of their podcast, and this is me talking about things. And you know what? You can always skip this part too. Maybe I'll have them put a little bit of music under this so that if you want to skip the intro, you can skip the intro and get to the content. Okay, that's enough. Oh, and yeah, just Venmo me at Gay Ariel if you want to support. Some of y'all have plenty of money. I don't know how many of my listeners really do. Y'all might all be broke, but some of y'all might have plenty of money. And if you do and you want to support me in my being on the road and being having car issues of multiple sorts on the road, then be my sugar daddy. Maybe that's what I should call my, yeah, my patrons, my e-patrons and Substack, my subs. I guess if you're on Substack, then you're my sub. If you're on Patreon, then you're my sugar daddy, regardless of gender or sex. But yeah, if you want to be my sugar daddy on Venmo, then Gay Ariel, GayArielle. I love it when people just send me money. It feels so good. I've decided my love languages. I always thought touch and tell were my receiving love languages. Gifts and time are my topping love languages. I'm a gifts and time top and a touch and tell bottom. But money also, it feels like you're, you know, it feels like you're touching me and telling me that you love me when you send me money. I just roll over my back like a kitten and go purr, 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 purr. Makes me feel like you value my mind and my body and my face. Okay. But you know what I mean? So yeah, you know, send me money if you, and I'll masturbate about you if you want me to. I'm just kidding. I won't unless you're hot to me. Okay, this is, you know what? But this is what my personality is like, so I may as well not hide it. And I hope you enjoy the episode with my friend Shannon, and that you learn how to, you know, just if you can take even one or two pieces of advice from this podcast on how you can help make the world a better place. We can all do this. And pick up 5 pieces of trash a day. Okay, love you, bye.
I am Shannon Amiot. I was originally trained in school to be a marine scientist. I have a bachelor's degree in that. I've worked in conservation for over 10 years. I started in Missouri in freshwater stream monitoring and assessment, and then moved to, after college, the Observer Program, which is a National Marine Fisheries Service program that helps monitor our nation's commercial fisheries. So I worked in Alaska on 3 different catcher processor vessels that were trawling in the Bering Sea, and then did 3 years in Hawaii on the commercial longline fleet. I only ever did tuna, but I have a shit ton of friends that did swordfish. So I really, the reason I did that was because I don't like to sit in, and wanted to see what conservation looked like out in the wild, which I ended up learning was actually a whole different degree, natural resource management. And from there, I learned that the people who make the rules from management are not actually the people who manage the resources on the ground. And that's why I transitioned into being a farmer. And to be honest, I probably got the majority of my understanding of how nature actually works from working in Hawaii.
All right. Great. That's perfect.
That's my story. Yeah. Now I'm just a major proponent of mindful embodiment and presence. I think that those things can transform the way all of us interact with our environment. And that's actually my thesis for today, mm-hmm. is that I would like to convince society to reduce waste in a mindful way that will not continue to benefit the same oligarchy responsible for producing it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's so many people that I talk to are like on the same page with that, but they're somewhere between like being kind of like to just admittedly lazy and going, I'm just going to shop at Amazon and not think about anything because I'm just a person and I can't do anything. It's those companies who should do something or whatever that, or all the way to like having real deep sense of values around these things, but just feeling a little bit helpless and like, hey, is what I can do going to make any difference? Is it, you know, does it matter at all? Or is it just that laws have to be passed that change the incentives of companies? And so I'll just vote or what, you know, like just help us to understand those of us who really do care or want to care, whatever. Like, yeah, I would love to know. But I guess like I try, you know, I try not to shop at the back. I don't use that much stuff. I don't buy that much stuff. I buy things secondhand. I try, you know, I mean, I just try to consume very little. I try to waste little, but I still feel like the ship is heading off the cliff and we all need to be doing a little more than what we have been doing. So
I wanted to first address that, like making reducing waste accessible for everyone is kind of the first step. Like I think a lot of the same corporations that sell petroleum are greenwashing all of their campaigns and making it seem like you also have to buy zero waste, which is bullshit. You definitely, there's already enough stuff already here that we can just pass it around indefinitely. And probably we've already made enough stuff to pass around for the rest of at least this generation's existence on this earth. We don't need to produce anything else. We so, already have it.
in terms of we don't need to produce any more batteries. We don't need to produce any more paper towels. We don't need to produce any more pianos. Like you're saying, like we just have enough of everything.
Yes. And you can repair it. So like
not toilet paper.
Reduce first. Yeah. I mean, you can just use a bidet or just like do what many countries did and use your left hand to like wipe your butt and then just wash your hands.
We could definitely be using a lot of paper. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know. I mean, that's one of those things that it's effective in a situation where I don't have any toilet paper, but especially if I just peed, like I don't really like being wet, you know, like some women just, you know, whatever.
But you have a little towel.
Yeah. Or just your arm hair works as an absorbent and then you can wash your arm. But then that uses water. So, you know,
that's true. It does use fresh water and many toilets already use like way too much fresh water.
So much water.
So. Yeah. That's like a whole other thing.
But that is something about reusing stuff, right? I always feel a little, I'm sure it's better to reuse stuff in almost every situation, but a lot of times to reuse stuff, you have to use so much water in order to wash the thing that I'm like, I mean, there are ways though, because some people when they're washing dishes, just leave the water on the whole time and like, whatever. And so you can, you know, rinse things, scrub, turn the water off, scrub, and then rinse with the water, but like be efficient about that. I mean, that's something.
So it already takes water to make products anyway.
Yeah.
And so I think I've gotten over, like, it took me a while to, like, you said that there's two kinds of people, like the people who have just kind of given up and are like, well, it's going to take change at the higher level rather than taking change at, like doing it ourselves, versus the people who have like an insane amount of guilt for taking like a 2-minute shower and cut their hair so that they don't have to use that much water to wash their hair. And I did that for like 2 years and would like cry and like be angry at people who would throw things away. Oh. And it just was not sustainable at all.
Yeah.
Not like for a lifestyle, like for a real person, that's just not okay. It's not a thing.
You can't just be angry all the time.
And that's why I like with
sad
and really sad, like super hopeless, like definitely didn't see the point in living at all at some point, you know, like it's just too much to think about how you're contributing. But then you realize that you have to take up space in the world and that these problems are bigger than just the individual, just like the farm.
Okay, so two things. One, I think this has helped me clarify something that I want this podcast to like really have as a part of it, is that I'm so just over the idea of passing the buck to the government or to big corporations. Like, there are people who are working on that, and I'm sure we should work on that, and I'm sure that those are the biggest things. But what I want to know for most of this is, like, what can I do? And even if what I can do is legitimately, like, calling my congressman or whatever, and, you know, people can give me actionable steps, but it's like, I want actionable steps for how I can do better, and how the audience can do better, things that really make a difference. And I mean, and then the other thing I was going to say is that, like, you say that we have enough stuff for this generation, but I wonder about that, like, because I wonder if, like take pianos, for instance. Now, we could probably share all the pianos. In fact, I know there's a lot of pianos around that people give them away for free because they're so hard to move. So maybe pianos aren't a good example. But there could be things where it's like, you say for this generation, the rest of our lives, but there are increasing numbers of people on the planet.
Yeah, so there's like always more babies.
So. 9, 10, 11 billion people. By the time you and I are dead, if we live normal length, you know, average length lives, like, there, we don't know how many billions of people are on the planet. So we might need more pianos at some point. But I think even if it's not strictly true what you're saying, it's much more true than the greenwashing companies are pretending. Like, you don't need to buy it. And they're constantly just trying to sell more stuff. And if we had some kind of morality to our economy, then there ought to be some awareness that from more people. I don't get a sense from a lot of people that they understand that, like, we're all consuming too much. That it's not just that you shouldn't shop at Amazon constantly. It's that you shouldn't be shopping at all that much. We don't need that much stuff. You could go to a thrift store, much less the packaging and delivery and everything that's happening with Amazon and blah, blah, blah.
And of course, then, like, you transitioned to talking about, sorry, it's going to be on your show, but, like, socialism and communism, sure. Like, what surplus value is and what the proletariat is and why we don't have time to take a Tuesday afternoon to go pick up your eggs at the local egg place. Here, it's like OK Poultry or, you know, the one just down the road. But their drop-off times are in the middle of the day. Like, your pickup times are in the middle of the day. And there's, like, always kind of situations where, yeah, you could do it more mindfully, but you also would maybe have to take a day off of work to go do it. And there's no way for somebody who's making even $15 an hour to take a day off. Like, that potentially is what helps you pay, like, your electric bill. So I think that the time it takes to actually learn about the process. I used to work on fishing boats, and I listened to 19,000 hours of podcasts for like 3 years, pretty much straight. Mm-hmm. And I still, like, just didn't know everything that was happening. And actually, that's how I fell into the trap of thinking that it was my own guilt and shame. Or like that I, like, put guilt and shame on myself because I was using too much. I fell into that trap because that's actually a corporation's plan. They want you to feel that way instead of, like, putting that onus on them. And that was, like, the litter bug campaign. Paul Gioni in 1947 made the word litter bug. And then that was used in the campaign in 1953, specifically from American Can Company, Continental Can Company, Glass Company. What do all those things have in common? They're all conglomerates that want you to give their glass back so that they can save money and make more. So it's just a continuous cycle. And that was around the same. It's better, like, ultimately, but that was actually the litter bug campaign / Keep America Beautiful campaign started when the federal government was considering more restrictive regulations on companies and trying to limit how much they were making. So then this was a way, a loophole for them to put the onus on the consumer rather than on themselves.
They were trying to drive the narrative that it's people individually who need to care about the environment. So they were putting the onus, like you said, on people. So, okay. So now we're back to, it is companies. And I get it. Like even with washing the dishes, I mean, commercial dishwashing is going to take a way huger percentage than at home. Now, sometimes there are people who are washing the dishes at businesses and they still could use less water during that. I mean, these are all things that I've, you know, thought of and put into practice in my life. But like, ultimately, how do we change I think we have to change the incentive structures of these companies, because if their whole thing is inherently as much profit as they can, then which that's, if you have shareholders, that's what you have to do, which is horrible. So there are some companies that could just try to choose to have different values. I mean, supposedly you hear that
they have no incentive to do that. And I think that that's like what's changing, right? Like you see, like even the rise of like recycling, like totally changed my mom's like psychology around what waste was. And then of course she taught us that. And then we started going to like volunteer days and picking up trash. And that's the like individual level that you originally were asking me what you can do on like an individual basis. And I think to a point, that's where my partner and I argued too, is that he was arguing that it's not my fault. And I was arguing that it's important for us to have this value at our core so that we can cascade that upward as it cascades downward. So setting that example in the first place. And I think to change the value of a dollar into the value of like a single social interaction is going to take our involvement at an individual level. So examples of what we do at home, social interaction, like what we're investing, like it's not just money, it's time and energy too. So thinking about what goes into what you're using every day, like the process that goes into what you're using every day. So I don't know, my time sending on the fishing boats like really helped me kind of see a little bit more clearly through what we think of as like dirty, especially HDPE and like milk cartons and stuff like that. Like all of that stuff was, it's such strong plastic that stuff can be reused like kind of indefinitely. And there were like shelves were made of that stuff. We had like different like drying racks made of that stuff. We had like really creative things. Like you turn that thing upside down and cut a hole in it, and it's like a perfect place to dry your sponge. In the Philippines, there were like mailboxes made of that stuff. Tires were used as planters. Like it looked to an American, it looked like a bunch of trash in your front yard and you would judge it. But to you, once you've lived there or once you've experienced those conditions, it manifests as being resilient, resourceful, and ingenious.
Right.
So that's really what came off thinking, was that, man, there are so many ways to use what we already have for basic functions in a way that even like made like, oh, what is that? Industry products are actually worse at it than, you know, this trash is. Mm-hmm. So that's like the value that I'm talking about, is that we have so many like stigmas against like eating bugs, but that might be our primary protein source by 2040. So
yeah, I think stigma is maybe the biggest thing that we've talked about so far, that is at a good intersection of individual, what we can do, and these larger levels, because we need to change the stigma. Right now, the stigma is against using trash. And what we, you know, think using old things to make new things, and like having that be what's in your restroom, what's in your kitchen, whatever. And so we're still very classist in this weird country that doesn't talk about class very much. Whereas the stigma should be on companies for behaving like this, for constantly making a bunch of stuff, creating new garbage by making a bunch of stuff and then convincing us that we need to buy it. We should all despise these companies and not buy their stuff. And instead, we should destigmatize and, in fact, what's the word for it? Applaud, but like some other eyes word. Anyway, you know,
we should celebrate.
We should celebrate reusing things, creatively reusing things. And it can be a competition for who can make the most beautiful reused stuff and then put your fucking picture on Instagram and get all your likes. And God knows that people would, if you could figure out how to make trash look pretty, then people will think that's really cool. So we can be the best at that. Bring the American entrepreneurial spirit to going, how can we look at these other third world countries who are using all this trash and making like their rinky dink stuff. Let's make really good stuff out of the trash and show them how it's done. Like if we change those values, because right now it's backwards day. We judge people for reusing things.
I just talked to Ifaika about that same ideology in that, for instance, the movie Maverick came out, and at the beginning of the movie, this is what my mom and dad saw. See it, so caveat here. But apparently at the beginning of the movie, Tom Cruise is like, blah, we spent like $1.7 billion on this movie. And now it's legal. And now I can like show you how amazing this movie is. And it was like $17,000 an hour per pilot. And there's like there's like a lot of planes in that movie, right? So like how many pilots and how much, you know, fuel was used and how many planes, essentially propaganda for the going, you know, wherever it is. It's just like this spectacle. It's a spectacle to watch, and like ingenuity of Panda Light Devil's Advocate, because it's me and Kaikoma. Why couldn't we celebrate the ingenuity it takes to just create one? But yeah, so that mindset is essentially what I was describing, is like it's a spectacle to create a $1.7 billion movie, but why is it not a spectacle to create a movie that costs $0? Right. Like that's the whole like reduce mindset, is we could, what you were saying, like we can make reuse something that we celebrate.
Yeah.
Collaboration.
I guess, I mean, this is when I sound like an annoying, like
using community.
Yeah. I mean, and I watch very few movies. I wish I watched more, you know, there are some good ones out there that I wish I watched more, but, this is when I started to sound like a liberal and a woman and whatever, and a queer, but I'm like, do we really need these action movies? Could we have an agreement where we can make like 3 action movies a year tops in different countries traded around? I mean, do we need them? Don't we have like, talk about that we have enough stuff for the next generation.
And even in a movie that was supposed to be the Avengers, the like last Avengers movie was supposed to be like woman power, raw. Mm-hmm. Like, look at all the women, look at all of them talking to each other. We passed the Bechdel test, like all of this shit. Mm-hmm. Fucking Tony Stark is still a fucking white ass savior. And yeah, he still ends up killing himself for the fucking benefit of the whole world. And you're like, if there's any solution in the history of humanity, it's going to be a solution that we all work toward together. Like, why can't we have movies that show the solution?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Instead of the savior complex, we need to figure out how we can all be the savior.
Every single action movie, even the good ones like Matrix, right, it's still the same people. How is even the remake was still with Neo and Trinity. Like,
and the good news for people who like these action movies is there's so much that they can just do with CGI. So like that I don't have to be offended by what we're wasting resource wise if they just can do it that way. But I think with some of them they get really into still, let's burn a real plane, it'll look cooler or whatever. So that's annoying. But yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying with the savior complex is so real. We just did an episode a couple ago about how we need to stop aggrandizing cops so much because they're really not doing that good of a job. I mean, look at the Uvalde situation. Yikes. Yeah. But so this is another kind of one of those where the narrative that we are presenting has a big influence on people. And if the narrative is always some hero saves the day, it really lets people off from their responsibility to like, we need to all figure out. This is why I just keep getting so frustrated with everybody. It's like, no savior is going to come. We have to change. We have to change what we buy. We have to change how we interact with products and companies and what, and we, those of people who, those of us who are the, we who are business owners, who are, you know, making decisions at higher levels, like figure out how to be, have a moral sense about this earth that we're sharing that we all need to save together. Like, especially if you are a Christian and you believe you're part of Jesus, then like be a part of the Jesus thing and do the right thing. And doing the right thing means not just like not, you know, masturbating or whatever it is in your religion. You know, it's like you need to care about the resources that all of us have to share and the harmony of the earth and the, because it affects the animals and it's not, you know, yeah.
Well, and a good example is the Adam Connolly and frickin' Obama came together and I don't know who hired who or whose idea it was, but they discussed it at the beginning, Netflix documentary or Netflix thing called The G Word, which is about government and the way that it interacts with our everyday lives. And they just did FEMA versus the Fed, which is like our emergency response bureaucracy versus our Fed, like our, you know, tax bureaucracy. And the Fed is like one of the most efficient bureaucracies in the world, so much so that we don't even like really know about it and how it like saves banks and how banks invest in it. So it doesn't actually use taxpayer money versus like FEMA, who left Puerto Rico for like 11 months without any kind of aid at all, even though those are American people.
Yeah.
So, but they talked about it and they were saying essentially like, it's our intention. Like it took people to make the Fed what it is. And it took people caring about, oh, what money? Oh, okay. So it makes sense in a capital system that we created one of the most efficient bureaucracies and something that we actually give a shit about. Whereas we didn't in a place where most of us are unaffected by natural disasters thus far, and we haven't invested in creating effective, efficient bureaucracy in the case of FEMA. And I was like, oh my God, can you say that again? But like in every component of our government systems, like it's going to take work and it's going to take the collaboration of a lot of people. And a movie that prioritizes like a single individual fixing everything ends up being what you see in every classroom and in every group project and every even when you get to like communications and advertising, it's still like always one person. It's not like a team. Yeah. So yeah, but I mean,
those people that's out like there,
that's an education thing.
Yeah. And those people out there who are writing movies should consider writing movies where it's collective action that saves the day. And we should see that more. I mean, cause I'm just also, I guess when we talk about what we can do on the individual level, it's like different ones of us have different parts of this that we can contribute. So if you're someone out there who is writing movies, then one thing you can do is really think about trying to inspire the masses to all feel like they can be the savior together.
Like Spider-Man, that's whoever. Yeah, I was blown away by that movie. It was like, find the superhero in yourself and like go and be the change that you want to be. And there's other people out there that are supporting you and want to support you. And they like showed that in his dad and in his mom and in his uncle, even though his uncle was like part of part of like the proletariat, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like it just, they showed that it isn't just one person, even though it still was Spider-Man, which I was like, this is genius. Like, what a cool way to show that it's not about one individual, that it's like this whole group of people. And that's education. So like, what does resilience, resourcefulness, and ingenuity like actually look like? And how do we celebrate it and put it like on an example? But then like, of course, the next thing that I think about is how do we eat? And so I've considered myself a local vore, which was a term that one of my medical friends, Annie, told me about. She's an ER doctor in Chicago, a shout out. But it's called in Hawaii, it's called Eat What Get. So you go out and you go like coastal reef, or you go out and you go hunting and you eat what get. So if you shoot a pig, then you eat the pig. And if you catch a bunch of fish, then you what you have. So that can be everything from like you find a snapper, which is something that you might recognize like from a restaurant, or a tuna if you go like have the means to go deep sea fishing. But most of the time you're going to get like little manini, which are these like convict tangs that are only like a couple inches long, and you just fry them up, you know. And so learning to eat what grows here. And I think that like tell somebody that, oh, you're supposed to have a specific green in your curry, but really you can put whatever the fuck you want in a curry. A curry is only a curry because of the spices that go into it. Curry is a curry in Thailand, same it does in India, the same it does in the Philippines. You know, it just uses different local vegetables.
Yeah, of course.
That all have similar nutritious values. So you have like a primary fiber, which in Thailand is watercress, but here it might be kale or spinach if you're on the mainland, right? And you just have to learn to like switch that stuff out for what's already here. And so like I eat a lot more Kahlua pork here than I would ever on the mainland, because that's just what's here. But I don't eat a lot of cow. Like I haven't eaten, I'm from Missouri originally. My grandpa's a cattle farmer. Uh-huh. So I used to eat beef like for every meal every day most of my childhood. And I almost completely became a vegetarian when I went to Thailand, because it just wasn't there. Like I lived on an island in the Andaman Sea for 4 months. I didn't eat any cow like the whole time.
Yeah.
Cambodia, yeah, exactly. Philippines, like no cow, because it just wasn't there. Don't eat it if it's not there. And on the opposite of that spectrum, don't tell someone you're not going to eat chicken when it's the only food there. Like, they may not have beans and other protein alternatives. So you're either going to be like taking a vitamin to get that protein, or you're going to eat what's there. And that's where I'm at with my like, I mean, I've maintained a healthy weight for 10 years and it's been the same exact thing. And I don't do anything special or any kind of special dieting. I just am active and I eat what's here. And that ends up usually being like the perfect balance of allergen, like protection and local nutrients and fibrous, you know, aspects of my diet. I don't even really have to think about it if you're buying stuff that's from where you're at. And that's hard to get to. Like that's hard to go to the grocery store and find. I think a lot of grocery stores like don't have that option, unfortunately. And that's really where I wanted like the farm to take lead, was to essentially establish like a schedule between local farmers to grow specific things, because Hawaii has like growing season pretty much year round. Mm-hmm. And then for grocery stores to coordinate the aggregation of food consistently through a predetermined schedule that all of the local farmers agree to. And then the grocery store never has to outsource. They can get all their food from farmers on this predetermined schedule, and then always distribute consistently, because that's what a grocery store was originally meant to do. I think grocery stores are a nexus of change, like in the way that we consume food, whereas like right now, Hawaii, 80% of food we eat, which is like 70% of that food is all fucking corn syrup. So, you know, just this endless like endless cycle of not getting the food that you actually need and not supporting the people who could transform the way that we eat and the how healthy we are. Just yeah. integral to like a resilient community in general.
So, I mean, people can be as locavorous as they can, especially shopping at farmers markets and things like that. People, you know, speaking of your mindfulness, just like listening to your body about what it wants to eat, it's going to generally want to eat things like you're talking about, like natural things, whether that's animals or plants.
A lot of people are addicted to sugar, so maybe it wants to eat ice cream 24/7.
I guess you have to cleanse a little bit before you can maybe fully listen to your body. I think a lot of times when you're reaching for ice cream, you're listening to your mind and not your body. But or different parts of your body, but because usually if I really like go inside, if I'm like, okay, I'm hungry, then I imagine eating steak and I'm like, no, that's not what I want. I imagine eating nuts. I'm like, no. And I imagine eating watermelon. I'm like, oh, that's it. You know, like if you kind of, at least for me, and maybe you do need to get your diet a little bit cleaned up before you can do this, because mine's not squeaky clean by any means, but it's just generally I lean toward more dense sources of nutrition because I want to be strong and healthy and fit and everything. So if you lean toward dense sources of nutrition, then you're not going to have too much room in your diet for bullshit. And then that way it kind of naturally cleans itself up and then you can listen to your body.
So that was like, the first thing was change the stigma. The second thing was rethink your diet and rethink like how your groceries, like just look into how grocers are funded and like, who, like where the power is coming from in that, and imagine like how grocery stores could be a nexus of change in stimulating local farmers and like the way that we support local farmers and just making it more convenient to support local farmers. Cause it seems like that's like what people want. It's just that they feel like it's not convenient enough yet. And then lastly, just like strategies to remain zero waste that don't benefit the oligarchy. So like, don't buy a canvas bag. You can actually just go to like Goodwill and get some reused clothes and they'll give you bags for free. They have like canvas bags just in like a bin in the back, because people usually bring clothes in bags and then just donate the bag too. And so you don't have to like buy them. And then I leave all the bags in my car and I have like a fold in bag in my backpack. And you never know, man, I go into all kinds of like different places and always need a bag for some reason or another. So I pretty much always have one in my backpack. I don't carry a purse anymore, because I carry like silverware in my backpack. So I don't like buy bamboo silverware. I just have like a Ziploc that I put like silverware in that's actually going to be like useful in like a restaurant setting. And even though it looks weird and it is stigmatized, pull out my own chopsticks instead of using the wooden ones on the table. The idea is that you're reducing waste regardless. It doesn't matter if the chopsticks are made of bamboo and they're in like a biodegradable package. If you're using them, there's still waste involved. Whereas you can just wash the ones that you have from home.
Right.
Just we also wash all of our
I love this focus on just wasting less.
Yeah And so I have Tupperware in my car, like most cars. My friend Ikaika does not and cannot drive a car because he cannot see at the level that the state needs him to see to drive a car. So he can't like carry Tupperware and he can't carry like all of this shit with him. So obviously there's some people that like, for instance, need straws to drink out of. Mm-hmm. And so restaurants should still carry straws, but just not at the capacity that they do. And well, it shouldn't automatically come with a meal. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, so you should have to ask for silverware and a straw, because what if you're just going to go home and eat the food anyway, and you have all of those things at your house?
Yeah.
But if you're going to go eat it in a park, then you can just ask for silverware. Like, they can still, again, they can still carry it, just less.
Just and ask. And yeah, they don't need to throw 12 packets of ketchup into your thing when I'm not going to eat any ketchup or whatever. There's so much of that where it's like, it's just so American. This just like default to like waste, 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 because we want our little free stuff, even if we're not going to use it. I've thought about doing Tupperware before. And I need to be better at this, because a lot of times, you want it to go thing. The to go thing is always some horrible styrofoam, and it's like
I never eat all my food. I can get like 3 to 4 meals out of every meal that I'm served at a restaurant, and that's kind of nice, because in Hawaii one meal can be like $20, so it's
like everywhere, dude.
Ends up being like $10 because I'm gonna eat it again later. But I always know I'm going to have leftovers, and I don't bring the Tupperware in with me. I just simply walk out to the parking structure, grab the Tupperware, bring it inside. And then it doesn't take like the ever to have to go back and bring it to you, especially if it's like a busy restaurant. You can just store your shit, pay your bill, and leave. Without having to do the whole like, oh, don't bring me silverware. Oh, what kind of container is this going to be in? If it's styrofoam, you know, I feel a certain way about it. So blah, blah, blah. Okay, and it's the same way. I also have like a little coffee. I have a coffee size container in my car, and I have a smoothie size container. If I don't have those with me, then I don't get coffee these. But if I have them, then I all have a smoothie like completely guilt-free. Aww. And it saves me money, because if I forget it, then I don't get a smoothie. And but then it's like a special treat, like, oh, I remember to clean it and put it back in my car, so I should go get a smoothie.
There are a lot of places will give you a little discount if you bring your own cup. A lot of places will do that, and you really never know. And
especially in Hawaii, they'll give you like, they'll look at you and kind of like be questioned, because there's still a stigma, right? So they're just like, I don't know if my boss will pay with this. Let me check. And then the boss is like, oh my God. And they'll come out, oh, hi. Like, what's your name? And they like love it.
Yeah.
And then they'll give you, I got like, instead of, which is like $20 here, I got 2 pounds of poke once, because I brought my own container and it was a little larger than the serving size that they had. And she just filled it up. And I was like, okay.
That's another great tactic for people to keep in mind. Actually,
it's just nice.
Bring your own containers, but bring slightly larger ones, because a lot of the time people are going to give you a discount and fill that shit up anyway. So this is your own interest, you know?
With the smoothie container, it helps to have the little, it's one of those like bodybuilder containers. So it has like the little ounces on the side. And so some restaurants like that, because then it's like, oh, I only want a 16 ounce, and it actually shows it on the cup where a 16 ounce is. So you don't have to like, sometimes they'll still fill it up to 20 anyways, because you have it. But you know, those are just like little things. And then the last thing that we do is refill stores. There's like zinc oxide is this whole new thing that isn't, that is reef safe and isn't like oxybenzone and all the things you're not supposed to have in the ocean. And we literally take a Talenti jar and we just like fully dump the container like into the Talenti jar. And so everybody always thinks we have ice cream on the beach, but it's just sunscreen. And especially when you've got to like slather that all over your body, like twice every 2 hours, like it helps to have like in bulk, and it helps to have it be like reef safe. And then it's also zero waste. Aerosol containers, like 1/3 of the sunscreen just gets like disappears into the air and doesn't actually go on your body. So I would just like strongly suggest to rub in your sunscreen, even though it's temporarily uncomfortable. But yeah, those are pretty much all the things that we do that's zero waste. We also, the last thing, really last thing, is the glass containers from like Prego bottles and like mayonnaise, or pretty much any glass container we use as cups. And then since our generation is pretty, nomadic, we figure that we don't have to store all of our cups when we leave. They're all containers that we would have recycled anyway. So we just are going to recycle them instead of move them around with us. And we don't have to feel like guilty about it because we just reuse them anyway for years.
Yeah. These are all great ideas. And these are all things that are
I have is either Goodwill or,
you know.
Yeah. This, and they're accessible and we didn't buy any of it. Like all of this stuff is just stuff that we've accumulated from just living a life in the 20th century or 21st century. Yeah.
This is all reminding me of this thing that happened when last time I was in LA, I was at the Comedy Store and I went after my show to watch some more. And like when I, right as I got on, there was a special drop in and it was Aziz Ansari and everyone went crazy. And I was like, oh, okay, fun. I've never seen him.
Wait, before. You were there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the one that's on Netflix?
No. This is just like he was just dropping in. People do comedy every night, Shannon. Okay.
I know, but it's so cool.
He's just doing a drop-in set. He was preparing. He like needed new material for something. You know, he needed to have a new 20 minutes soon. So he was just like kind of shooting the shit and doing crowd work. And so he asked the audience, like, is there anybody here who really tries not to shop at Amazon? And I was like in the back and I'm not trying to, as a comedian, I'm not trying to get involved in something like that. So I didn't, you know, and let's see what other people have to say anyway. And so the first couple of people, it was like, someone didn't like to shop at Amazon because they got annoyed at something that happened with them once. So it was like a personal thing. And he was like, wait, isn't there somebody who's like trying not to shop for, you know, like moral reasons of like not, buy- and yeah. so of not, you know, just like wasting all of the stuff and killing all the middle class and blah, blah, you know. As I always say, so many of the same people who never would shop at Walmart and understood that that was destroying the middle class just have no qualm buying 12 things a day from Amazon right now, even though Amazon is.
Especially if you have Amazon Prime. Holy worse. Crap, does that make it so much easier?
And it's 20 times worse than Walmart. So when he finally found one, as he's finally found one person in the audience who was like, you know, kind of, or maybe he couldn't even find anyone. I don't know. He finally got to the point where he was like, okay, well, there's this idea.
You know, Walmart actually has a union.
Yeah. Yeah. Walmart isn't, all things are relative. And now Walmart doesn't seem that bad. So isn't that funny? Okay. Aziz is like, you know, unable really.
Wondering if somebody.
Yeah, he was like unable really to find anyone who really wasn't shopping at Amazon. And so he said he had this experience where he just wanted to get like maybe a wooden spatula or something. And he was like, okay, well, if I'm not going to shop at Amazon, what do I do? And so then he like drove to the mall to Sur La Table. And he was like waiting in line for it. Like he goes through this whole thing and ultimately it's just this annoying thing where he's like, is this any better to shop at Sur La Table than it is in Amazon? And he really was like beside him. Like he was like trying to figure this out. Like he clearly really, and I really wish I could have talked to him because I want to be like, one, sure. It's probably better, even though but it took him 2.5 hours, whereas it could have taken him 2 minutes, you know, but so ultimately like, I don't
and
know.
Also the gas that it took to get there.
Right. Everything. The gas. So well, that's what I'm saying. Like, dude, but he was like, is there really an answer? I'm like, yes, the answer is a thrift store. The answer is, and if nothing else, you could go to have a better buying experience where you go to a local market. You know, he lives in LA. It's like, go to a local market where people make stuff and go buy a wooden one that someone made out of, you know what I mean? If you really want to do the right thing, or go to a thrift store, have your assistant. And it's like, you're rich enough. You know, you pay someone to go to a thrift store and buy all the things that you need, you'll still save money, you know? But yeah, like if you really want because what it is the waste. It's not just who's getting the money, although that is a big part of it. It's we're just wasting. Whereas we still have so much, or like learn how to make wood or find someone, put a Facebook like or Instagram.
I thought you were going to say he like looked up a video on YouTube and just made one himself.
Or I something. Wish. But he's, you know, if you're famous, you have that kind of reach. You could literally just put out a message on your Instagram story that was like, does anybody make wooden spatulas out of sustainable wood source or whatever? Then like DM me and I'll send you $50 for you to ship one to me. Like you have money.
So yeah, There's actually a national nonprofit called Buy Nothing. And that's where I have gone, quote unquote, shopping for the last 2.5 years. And I'm not joking. I think more than half of the clothes in my closet are, I mean, all of my clothes are either hand-me-down or thrift store, but then more than half of the clothes now in my closet, because now it's like, it doesn't even cost me any money to get more clothes. So I just like get rid of half my closet every other couple of months, because then I can just go to one of these Buy Nothing meets. And what you do is the lady who manages it in Oahu is like a self-proclaimed hoarder. And she just loads her car up with all of this extra stuff that she knows she doesn't need, but that she cares about, right? That's like an inherent thing to the condition. And then you bring it to this little swap meet that happens every other Saturday, which she doesn't have any in June yet, which is annoying. But anyway, but everybody opens their trunk and puts some stuff out on like a little tarp. Some people even bought like a little display rack for the clothes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you go around, you leave your car completely open to this group of people who have all agreed to be there. There's rules against bartering. There's no money involved at all. And you go around in a circle for an hour. It can only be an hour long because otherwise like it might be an attraction to other communities and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, to keep it like straightforward, it's an hour long and people are like staking out. Like they'll see like a nice knife block that they really want and they'll get there at like 9:30 and the event starts at 10 and they'll just wait there at your like your little sheet.
But also I went there with
no, like my entire car was packed with stuff and I went home with nothing. Like it's not only a way to get rid of stuff, like, you know how, like, if you need to throw like a battery away, there's actually, you're supposed to like put it in a container and bring it to like a Best Buy because like batteries aren't supposed to go in the trash. Or like, if you have needles, they have to go in a hards container and then get turned into a hospital. Or if you have like old prescriptions, you're supposed to put them in a baggie and send them to Stericycle, which takes the remainder of the medicine and like reuses it. Like, there's so many ways to like take care of the things that you're getting rid of instead of just simply throwing them in the trash. But instead of having to do like 4.5 hours of research on like how things should be recycled and put in the trash, you can just go to this Buy Nothing meet and someone else take it and fix it, potentially refurbish it.
They're taking old batteries and needles.
No, but like, you know what I mean? Like old DVD players and like old monitors. And also we take in there like lamps and vacuums.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff we don't want to have to deal with.
We got a brand new Kirby vacuum. Kirby vacuums are like $700 because they're so good. We got a brand new one. Chris paid for for free, right? Because this is Buy Nothing. Chris paid for like a $20 like little rod to replace. And it's like a brand new Kirby vacuum that we got for
another person
free.
Just didn't want
that thing will last us the rest of our lives. Yeah. It's amazing. Like we were so excited. Like I'm such a nerd for this shit.
No, that's great. I just looked up. We've got to Buy Nothing Austin. So I'm going to check that out. That's great. So good.
Izzy actually.
You've converted at least
Buy Nothing Houston. So.
You've converted at least one person to the Buy Nothing stuff and the Tupperware and the car. So there you go. I was going to say also, do you know if there are any resources for people who want to look into reusing things, making things into sponge drying racks and whatnot? Are there YouTube videos, Instagram accounts, whatever? Are there things that people are making, little books? Do you know some offhand?
The ones that I know are actually on Reddit, but I mean that they like manifest in other ways on like Facebook and Instagram too. r/zero waste, r/anti-consumerism, and r/anti-capitalism or anti-work, I think is
zero consumerism. Like, is that what it was?
Zero waste.
And then anti-consumerism.
Yeah. Of course. And you know, you get closer and closer to socialism eventually.
But. Well, and let's not scare people away, because there are some people who are like pretty like boo on the word socialism, but who still might want to care about the environment, you know, because we all care about. And so, and yeah, because
you can also cut that out. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. I just think those words, there are so many words that have just become too loaded because different people think they mean different things. And so it's just like with feminism or something where it's like, it depends on how you define it. But some people are defining it one way and really hating it. And some people are defining it a very different way and loving it. And so they can't see eye to eye because we don't even have the same terms. So I think with socialism, that's one of those where not enough people have the same terms for us to even use that word most of the time. Yeah.
That's why we need to define it ourselves and create a culture where we are just a little bit more mindful about how we interact with each other, because the whole point is there's like a whole pamphlet called How to Make a Community, or like, dang it, I'm not going to remember it. But anyway, it talks about how you can use a community to do this buy nothing thing.
Yeah.
Like not just for physical things, but for also work involved things. And you can start, instead of using dollars, you can start exchanging with different things. Somebody might be a storyteller, somebody might be a singer, some other person might be like a event planner. And then all of a sudden you bring the neighborhood together with these people's services, and then everybody gets like a free meal because it's a potluck, at the same time that there's all the trunks open and people exchanging goods. And then somebody talking about being a carpenter and somebody else talking about being a plumber, and people have like simple issues that wouldn't take that much that could really use like a home cooked meal, or maybe somebody to listen to their story grieving somebody they recently lost. And those are the types of exchanges that I think really bring power back into the hands.
It's cutting out the middleman,
putting the value or.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. It's cutting out the middleman of a lot of these companies that are very wasteful that we all have in our lives. Just having community. I mean, this is bringing me back to like the first few episodes that I ever did at this podcast, back a couple of names of the podcast ago, because we talked so much about the importance of having like neighborhood communities, because when you have neighbors knowing each other, then it turns out someone's a plumber. You don't need someone to drive from, you know, from 15 minutes away from some company who's going to come over and not really care about doing a good job, but they're going to make way too much money after whatever. You could take care of his kids next Tuesday for 2 hours, and he's going to fix your plumbing for free. And then now no one's driving anywhere. We've cut out the middleman. Everyone's saving money. Everyone's saving time. And that kind of thing, because you know, it's not just that we don't go to church anymore, but we don't know our neighbors anymore. It's like, pick your poison of which thing has gone wrong with our society. But we need to know our neighbors. If we know our neighbors, it's like, it's your moral duty to know your neighbors, because then you can help them. And because in them being able to help you, you're actually doing better for the environment, say. So like, this whole episode, like, we're destigmatizing anti-consumerism. And in fact, we're celebrating anti-consumerism, realizing that should be what's sexy. That should be what's cool. That should be what gets you laid, you know, with a desirable partner or friend.
Actually, it actually did get me laid before.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you could probably get laid a lot on your cred.
I ate Thai food with on a date. And I was like, wait, we were like halfway to the restaurant and I had parked like around the corner essentially. And I was like, wait, I gotta go get, you know, my Tupperware. And he like raised an eyebrow, and then I like ran out and got my Tupperware, and the restaurant was like kind of raised an eyebrow, but then was like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
We can take your stuff. And he's like, I never knew that it was like, okay for restaurants to do that. And I was like, oh, I've been doing it for like 2 years. He was like, just the mystified look on his face was like, you really stand for what you stand on, don't you? Hot. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, that's sexy.
Yeah. It is sexy. So, and that's the thing. You probably could have got laid anyway, but you got loved, I bet. But that's something that people need to think about, is that it's not just like, oh, I wish people saw it as sexy. If you do it,
then people will see it as sexy. It's so rare right now. Get in on the ground floor of bringing your Tupperware, because if you do it, I mean, early adopter of this, it's sexy right now. It is sexy. You just have to give people a chance. The only reason it's not sexy to people is because they're not. And if someone doesn't think it's sexy, you should be fucking it in the first place. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That you don't want somebody that is going to go directly to Amazon instead of like waiting. Maybe like you don't need that spatula today. Maybe you have like a different tool that you can be creative with to like hold on for one more week until the fine.
Creative about meets. What you're cooking. What can I cook? Where and I then, spatula?
Like there's a spatula at every buy nothing meat. I tell you, there is a spatula. In fact, there's actually like a stack of spatulas at every buy nothing meat. Like you will find one, I promise. And it'll be free. Like it doesn't, it just takes some patience. And I mean, and it takes that mindfulness to be like before clicking the button, it takes the mindfulness of being like, wait, what other options do I have?
And I'll say,
yeah, I mean, in the end, there is a Goodwill down the road that you can go to. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't suggest that as like a scenario, even just reaching out to your community. If you do have a good, like an established community.
Yeah. A Facebook
even
post,
just sharing can. One.
Yeah. Who's got a spatula? Craigslist, Facebook.
But whatever. I think a big thing, especially like we were talking about, like the plumber situation is that, and this brings it back to the farm too, is that plumbing is like a difficult job and those people can get paid like $1,000 for doing something relatively simple if they were working for themselves. But often plumbers are working for a company that take the majority of the surplus value and then only pay them like minimum wage for doing the job. So you can still offer your plumber money. In exchange, but that money would directly go to them. And then it would maybe even give them the impetus to own company or start their own business so that they can start doing that on like a smaller scale. If they already know what's happening, like it's an incentive to take autonomy back within a capitalist system. And that's like why I started my own business, is because that's happening with snorkel instructors as well. But it takes it back to the farm because you have the trade that you, the exchange that you have when that person fixes your toilet is maybe 2 hours of babysitting their kid really isn't $600 worth of
work. Oh yeah, I don't know the math.
Work. It might be really,
yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's where people get scared off. They're like, oh, trade won't work. But it really has to just be reciprocal with the person that you're talking to.
Right.
If you have dinner with that person every week and they love you, maybe they won't even take your money when you offer. But the point is to offer it. Like Ikaika helped me make the website for my business and I have offered money and he won't take it. But that the point is that when I go over to his house, I bring food. Yeah. And when I go over to somebody's house, and I don't want to eat their food because I might not appreciate, I might not really want to be that intimate with them, I'm creating a relationship based off of reciprocal exchange. And reciprocity is based on individual boundaries and preference. And those are things that have to be decided on an individual basis and shouldn't be based on some kind of like stock market value. That stuff comes down to like your relationship with the physical human being standing in front of you. And I think that Jessica Fern's book, Polysecure, is a really good way of learning about how you can begin the discussion of like what reciprocity looks like, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And that's definitely how I've tried to figure out balance in relationships.
That's called Polysecure. Okay, great.
That book is magic.
I'll link to all this stuff. That sounds great. Yeah. Like, because reciprocity, it's like, it's always what I want, but it can be awkward. Sometimes you don't know how much the other person really should be given for something. You don't know how much to ask for something yourself. Like those things are so difficult. I like what you're saying about like just offering, always offer and let the other person kind of say how much they might need, if anything or nothing or whatever. Cause like you said, if it was your neighbor and you were just talking about it, you'd be like, I have this plumbing issue. is there any way that you could, you know, that I could hire you for this? Then that allows them to say, well, yeah, like I could, you know, charge you this much, or, you know, if you wouldn't mind, you know, taking me to the airport 12 times. I don't know.
Yeah, it just provides for like intersectionality. Like everybody has different circumstances. And so being able to negotiate and like talk to that person on an individual basis, and again, like destigmatize the conversation that you're having at all. Mm-hmm. Because in a capital system, that conversation is always going to be based on money, but it doesn't have to be. That's essentially the whole like had today was just saying that we need to engage in a different way when it comes to exchange. And that means to devalue what a dollar means and increase the value in what like a personal conversation is. And the only way to do that is by being present when you need something, or being present when somebody else wants something that maybe you can provide, and like figuring out what that looks like on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, some of this stuff is kind of hard because it used to be inherent in society that certain people with certain amount of wisdom would fulfill certain societal functions. But now it's like everybody does everything. Like an 11-year-old may know as much as a 50-year-old, especially like in the case of like the Senate, mm-hmm. like what just basic kindness is, and like why, you know, things are, why certain, we talk about like why certain laws are dangerous, but in the end, like it's the value of the life that was taken because of the failure of, you know, an older class of people, but it was the consequence on, you know, children. So I just like, if we can redefine value at like a proletariat level and make it accessible to more people, then maybe we can redefine value, you know, from the bottom up. And that means that the uprising of that kind of cultural change will be reflected in the laws, in regulation laws that we're all depending on changing, not doing any work to actually change.
Yeah.
And like, I haven't bought anything from Amazon in 3 years, and we used to have Amazon Prime.
Good job.
So it's just like, in, you know, that's for me, like, when we live by ourselves, we fill a single trash bag every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It just costs us. I'm unemployed right now, so I can't like just go out and buy something. Like it has to be a decision. And in the end, like the oligarch that you're benefiting is almost always like fossil fuels and petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to slip that in there because ultimately that's what's running. That's what's continuing capitalism on an international scale. And that's like often the impetus to most of the negative things that we're all experiencing as a part of who has the power right now, and to take it back on an individual basis is really the only like hope in response to such a massive international geopolitical crisis.
All right. So we all need to stop sucking the petroleum company's dicks via buying all their shit, and everything is made of plastic. So when you're buying all the garbage that you buy from Amazon or from Walmart or from even local cute places that make things, a lot of them are just made with plastics, which means you're fucking the world up and you should be ashamed of yourself or whatever it is, or use guilt and let you change your,
but I mean,
whatever it is.
Even electric is fueled by petroleum plants, you know, like yeah. It's literally every part of our waking lives is involved in petroleum. And a good podcast is Drilled by Amy Westervelt.
Drilled?
Yeah, it talks about like the history, not just of garbage and trash and recycling, but it also talks about why we think that these people somehow deserve the money that they have. Gotcha. And I think that once you learn a little bit more about the history behind where the impetus for Lycus action comes from, the more it makes more sense to take the power back, like that it's only benefiting these people when there's so many of us who have skills who that can be employed on an individual basis. So, hey.
Well, so we do need to wrap up soon, but okay.
Cut everything.
Yeah, I'll just cut it all out. Don't worry. We'll just probably just do this right at the end. Do you have any final thoughts that you haven't shared yet?
A couple of things, the stuff that I wrote a paper.
Thank you for that. That's beautiful.
Nice. So I have like all kinds of references of like where I learned, you know, where these things came from, mm-hmm. how they mess up our system. So I could like list those.
Take a picture and send it to me or whatever. I can include it somewhere. Show notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Because it's just like a whole history. And I was blaming myself for so long. And then to learn that all of that negativity came from an industry that's doing anything it can to survive really helped me understand that it's got to be more than just me, that mm-hmm. I'm not a movement. And that's like, again, with the farming as well. And so now it's been like 6 months since I worked on the farm, and I finally feel like I'm living a life that is more or less like stress-free, guilt and shame-free, which is like the basis of pretty much America's culture, but kind of like ecumenism in general is all based in guilt and shame. And if you can rid yourself of those things by creating like a more accepting and vulnerable culture, you know, I don't know, like there's no lid to what humans can do, and we can do it quickly. It just takes, you know, this impetus to think about what you're doing and what waste really is and who it's benefiting, rather than, you know, using what is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for preaching to us today. No, it's very informative and useful, because I mean, a lot of these things are things that I already do, but that I wish other people did. But then there's always a million more things that I can do. So I'm just like there's so many people, everyone's on a spectrum with where they're at with all this stuff. But I would like to think that some of the people listening to this will at least have heard one, if not three or four things that they can actually implement into their lives. I think we, you know, talked about some things, and even if it's just as simple as like not stigmatizing other people who do it and not being weird about it if someone else brings Tupperware. I mean, even that, you know, just having a little added consciousness of like what should be attractive versus what should be unattractive in mates and in companies, like, then, you know, yeah, I think you did a lot of good here today. Thanks, Shannon.
Good. As long as I don't get weird looks from now on.
Also,
but it's pretty great. I don't know. It's a lot of the clothes that I wear and stuff, like people ask me where it comes from, and I'm always like, do you know? Buy nothing. Like, exactly. And they're like, you got that from someone's, you know, trunk. Ugh. And I'm like, you're the one that just complimented the shirt. Yeah. So I don't know what you want from me.
How weird that they're like, oh, it's been in a trunk before. Like, do they have any idea how things travel around the world to get before they get to the store?
It's been on somebody else's body. Yeah, yeah. And to be like, I wear secondhand shoes and secondhand underwear.
Yeah, no, I've been shopping at thrift stores for so long. That's ridiculous to me.
And eventually, like, we're gonna be our vegetables are gonna be grown in aquaponic systems fueled by our own feces. So
yeah,
you know, like eventually we're gonna have to get over some of the like things that we've just distanced ourselves from.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. This is funny stuff. Like, I don't know, if you live on a fishing boat for any amount of time, you know what your own poop looks like. And it's important to know, because then you'll know if you're like, like, you'll know if you're sick, or you'll know if you need like one more fibrous diet or something. Like, just pay attention.
I mean, I look at my poop. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, throwing it overboard and stuff like that. Like, people just don't get it. Like,
oh, like watching fish eat it makes a difference.
Yeah. Like looking at it and interacting with it like every day is very different than just like flushing it away with 5 gallons of water, fresh potable water, every time you flush it.
All right. Toilet, well, you know. Whenever I have you back on, you can convince everyone that they should look at their own poop more.
Look at their
poop. Should play with their poop and feed it to fish and whatnot. We'll get that for next time.
I didn't mean that's like that was supposed to
it's like be level, like an after level three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're still levels 1 and 2 over here.
And when people like look at me and are like, oh, you're just, you know, this, especially if I'm like dressed up or something, like people are like, oh yeah, cishet femme girl. Bye. Like, you have nothing not interesting het. To say. And what? I'm not, you don't know, But that's, you know, it's like what I come off as. So
yeah.
People are just like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, and then now it's like, man, I'm just turned 28. And I just feel like there are so many things that have been stigmatized in our society that just is like totally unnecessary. And I'm so sick of it. Like,
yeah, we need to change what's so sexy. Many
things that we can fix. I just,
We need to change. We switch out a lot of the things that are stigmatized and make them sexy, and vice versa. I think that's big. That's something where, especially because I do also advocate for some people to try out polyamory, whatever, then I'm like, especially if you have that kind of situation going on, then the men, especially who are, I mean, if a woman really wants to date a lot of men, whatever, but usually that doesn't happen. But if the men who want to date a lot of women, if the ones who get rewarded, if you get rewarded for anti-consumeristic, you know, anti-wasteful, good for the environment, good for the world kind of things, like that should be played more, and not spending a bunch of money on a bunch of garbage and like just being a consumerist. Like, that should get you unlaid.
Making a $1 billion movie.
Yeah. No one should fuck that. It should be seen as fucking gay, you know, to make 1.7 million. It should be seen as the gayest thing in the world to light planes on fire and pollute the earth and waste resources and whatever. Let's change the word gay to mean like wasteful.
I just can't like stress enough that that's taxpayer money. Like, it just is insane to me that so much of the technology that we use to make vaccinations, and that we use to make technological advances, and that we use to make military, you know, war zones, is taxpayer money. And then it's privatized and sold back to us like it's some special thing that we don't have an entire bureaucracy, you know, fueled to do it. And that's like us, that's people. And that's like, that's power. And we've made the government something scary. And like, Musk is constantly talking about how the government sucks. And he's the one that uses all of these grants and all of this research and information to benefit himself and his company rather than us, the ones that pay for that technology to create the lithium ion battery in the first place.
I've never understood where those people get off who, criticize the government and the laws and stuff. And then they still benefit from all the loopholes and all the bullshit. And I'm like, why don't you just do the right thing? Because no one else is doing the right thing. Well, but you're so smart. You're so good at everything. So why don't you figure out how to do the right thing anyway? Or do you need $60 billion? Okay.
Well, and that's like a class thing. Like, in the end, it's just like a really different culture that they experience.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's going to take empathy to be inclusive to a certain degree. But I think that like no one really needs $60 billion. So
yeah, just use that maybe money that should cool exist. It's just weird to have it at any one time, because you should always be like using that money to do cool things. You should be investing that money in all kinds of ways. Like, but there, I mean, I don't know, there's $60 billion, like how their assets are even counted. I don't know.
he even asked like how to solve world hunger, and the UN, who's like, you know, maybe not like as effective as it could be, but they're like, hey, we serve 185 countries, and here is the exact way that we could use, I think it was like $500,000 or like even like $6 million or something like that. And when they like, they detailed like the whole plan, and they were like, we could benefit like this many more people. We could like feed this many more people. And Musk was like, well, that's not ending world hunger. And then he put that in a subsidiary like bank account and hedge funded it. Like he, that money did not go in, and we are not feeding all of those people just because it did end world hunger. And like everybody who stands up for Musk is like, well, the UN didn't tell him how they'd end world hunger. They just told him how they could feed an extra 2 billion people. And you're like, why don't you just feed 2 billion people? I don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what is that's pretty fucking gay.
The senator from New York was like, oh, $500,000 could like fix the lead piping in Flint, Michigan, but I'm going to use it on my own campaign for president. Like,
yeah.
Why would you say that? Why don't you just fix it?
Yeah.
It's so awful.
God damn everybody. But hopefully some of these people
will start doing the right thing.
I don't know. But thank you, Shannon. I got to go.
We can do the right thing.
You've inspired me to make some positive changes. Some that I've been meaning to make, some I didn't really know about. I'm going to look up these things on Reddit. I'm going to put all these things in the show notes. So thank you so much for taking the time to help inspire people to make the little changes that we can make. Because it is, there's also a ripple effect, because everyone that then I tell about these things, whether in person or in the podcast, can tell two more people, and let's spread this Tupperware shit. But we get on the ground floor where it's still get us laid. So,
yes. Shout out to Chris Getzy, my partner, because many of these resources actually came from him. I wasn't using Reddit until about 2 years ago. So,
well, it's always a boy who gets you onto Reddit.
Exactly.
I knew there was some reason we keep those boys around.
Yeah.
They can be useful. All right, Shannon, I'm going to stop the recording. Thank you so much.
I don't think I really need to say much because I already said everything at the beginning of the episode. I just hope you enjoyed it and that you subscribe to the podcast, tell a friend, come to see my shows, subscribe to my Instagram, Ellen DeGenderless, go to my Substack or Patreon. It's politicallynb for both of those. politicallynb.substack.com, patreon.com/politicallynb, Venmo me at gayariel, GAYARIELLE. Yeah, sorry if there's, you know, a lot of driving by sounds. This is the sounds of San Francisco. Hopefully that sounds nice. And I will be back when I'm back with another episode from someone cool in my life. Love you, bye. Shout outs to Raymond Cabrera, my producer, Coleman Wilson, my music guy, and Caleb Sexton, my art person. If you want to collaborate in any way with us here at Politically Nonbinary, you can email me at ariel.norman@gmail.com, ariel.norman@gmail.com, or send me a message on Instagram at ellendegenderless. I guess you can also send me a message on Twitter if that's more your thing, at demibinarial, demibinarielle. It's a joke about Demi Lovato. Okay, bye.